Accession number 27096, Reel 4.
Just like going to prison, you had photographs taken, the front side view, and you were given your number. Because after, when you left there, you didn't have a name, it was just a number all the time you were a prisoner.
Do you remember your number?
Yeah, 11213. Yeah. 11400 Dreisen, in German. Yeah.
Really? So, during your 5 days at Luckenwald, what sort of a camp was that?
Well, it was Stalag 3A. It was a big transit camp where we were like with us, all fresh prisoners coming in, and you were interrogated, and then you had all your possessions, what you had, you were taken away from, and then it was all censored, like. And that, and then if you had any money, they took it away for you. You had to watch taking all that sort of stuff. Some of it you got back, and some you didn't get back. And then by then you were allocated to different Stalags.
And you went to Stalag 3.
Yeah, that's Berlin.
Yeah. And what was it like there? I mean, I know that's.
Well, the first camp, it's just like these horror films, like. We arrived there. We got off the station, and we marched to this camp. And it was right out. Of course, there's no small fields like there is in England. Like it was all like you know there was, and we had to march out into more or less wasteland. And it was dark, and it was at that time of the year, you know, it was just like it was misty. And of course they had the blackout there, but all you could see.
I'm going to have to stop you there. We've got the end of the reel. Cliff Hoare, end of reel 3. Cliff Hoare, reel 4. So you were just describing what it was like. What was the building? Was there one building there, or was it?
Well, this is where I'm going to this camp.
Yeah.
No, it was all wooden huts, and they were all arranged in a square, like with a green in the middle, and that. Well, but when we could see it from the distance, I mean, it was all lit up, and it sort of glowed in the dark, and it was a miserable night. And we got in there, and I thought, "Oh, this is where I've got to stay for." I don't know, but it was. I mean, we really had a bad time there because we didn't get any Red Cross parcels for quite a long time, like you know. And by the time that all the treatment we'd had coming from Crete, I mean, and I was covered with running ulcers, and we all had this beri-beri, you know, that you couldn't, your hands used to swell up and that sort of thing,
what was the food like?
Well, all we had was was cabbage water, more or less, You had sort of, you know, so dry rations. There was some boiled baked potatoes in their jackets, like, and a lot of these potatoes were black, you know, and then you had a bit of bread as a ration, like. But the thing was, what was annoying with us, that we used to come in from work, because, I mean, it used to be out work, and you go eat on these... And you never saw the camps in daylight during the day because you went out in the dark, you come back in the dark. And when you come back here, you go into your barrack room, and there'd be 24 in each room, like you see. And there'd be perhaps three loaves there, tin loaves. Some of these loaves had been manufactured back in 1930 something, like they're all frozen, like you know, frozen bread. It was horrible. It was just like, I don't think there was much flour in it, I think it was all sawdust, horrible. But what annoyed us, they'd taken all our knives, everything away from us, naturally. But you had these loaves there, and you had to cut, if you had three loaves and you had 24, you had to cut it up into 24 sections, and you had a list up on the horse. It was your turn, or when is your turn to go out there? You dreaded it, like you had to try to, and you had no
knife.
Yeah, that's right. You had to break it up into pieces, and you know what? Hungry Ben, I mean, they more so counting the grains on the road. And there was always trouble with that, like, you know. And they wouldn't get, couldn't get any knives and that, which I did later on, but I got some punishment for that. But there was not only that, and then, you'd have to go and go down to the gate with your, all we had was a bowl and a spoon, that was all we had, and go down to, and get your ladle of soup and come back, like, and we had that just so well, and then that was all. You, in the morning, one chap would go down the gate and he'd come down back with a jug of the Zusatz coffee, whether it's made of acorns or what else was it, acorns and sunflower seeds. Now, that's how they used to call it, coffee. And we used to use that for shaving, you know, that. But like in the winter, we used to drink it because going out, it used to warm me up a little bit, like, you know.
Because when you were first there, I mean, it was December, wasn't it?
So, yeah.
I mean, it must have been terribly cold, was it? Did you have much bedding? Or?
No, we had two thin blankets. That was one of the first things you got there. We had a long sack, which was your mattress, and you had another sack, for your pillow. And you took that down. You all had to take turns to go down to the kind of a barn they had there, and you filled all these with straw. That's all you had. And you had your two blankets, and that's all. But, I mean, that winter there was the worst winter they'd had for years, like, you know. And we used to wrap our blankets around us to keep it, and go to work with them on, like, you know, to keep us warm. And most of the chaps had, like, come from, lost all their gear, and they were, I mean, it was a long time before the Germans started giving us something. And I've got a photograph in this book here, shows us all in, they issued us in French uniforms. They took our boots away from us. They said that they'd be going in for repairs and that sort of thing, but they never came back because they repaired them and they all went for their own troops. They issued us with these clogs. And I did have a mate, another chap that I'd got friendly with, Lance Corporal Lusted, Charlie Lusted. He was in the Royal Sussex. And he had ulcers on his legs, on his feet and that sort of thing. And with these clogs, he couldn't wear them. And he used to walk through the snow to work in his bare feet. He wasn't allowed. We had a little MO doctor there, a little Indian. We called him Black Magic because that's all he could do, Black Magic for us, like. And he was only allowed to have 5% sick. No matter how many it was bad, like, he had to pick out the worst. And Charlie didn't come into that, and he had to go there, like, you know. But he said to me, he used to, on the top bunk, and I was the bottom bunk, and he used to say to me, he said, Cliff, he said, I'm not going to stand more of this. He said, I'm going to try to have a, break and get out there. I said, look, Charlie, you can't go yet. I mean, there's not the weather or anything like that. I said, leave it till later on. So when we did move, we moved to the camp, and we were on different working parties. And, of course, I mean, anything that happened during the day, when the parties come in, there was all this jungle war telephone thing. It all went right to the camp. All the news went right to the camp in a couple of seconds when you come in.
So when you first got there,
yeah,
they started you working straight away, did they?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
What sort of work?
Navvy work. It was all navvy work, yeah.
And what was your work party like? What did you do?
Well, the annoying part was, I mean, the Geneva Conventions tells that you're entitled to, you should work to keep yourself, mentally, right, and also, your fitness. But, I mean, they were winning the war then, and you went out to these jobs, and you had to be on piece work, more or less. They allocated so much work that had to be done. And
so
whether
digging, was
Yeah, that's right. It moving so much stuff, and it all had to be transported on these railway, little railway trucks and all that sort of thing. Well, I mean, all the weak chaps, I mean, it just couldn't keep up. I mean, you had to sort of help them out, so, because all the wagons had to go down together, like, you know.
Yes. Yeah.
And, but, it got to, you had to complete all this before you could come back to camp again, so that's what it was.
So what sort of thing were you digging in?
Well, the first job they gave us, we went out where the Germans were the first to bring out these motorways, like it was autobahns they called it, didn't they? We were working on that, and then eventually, you know, we were hired out to all different firms because they were so short of, you know, that all the chaps being called up, they did depend on all their conscripted labour, all the people they'd brought in from their occupied countries and all that. But we had to go out as well. So I might work for the gas company one day and an electric company the other day and all things like that.
Yeah. How were you treated by these German civilians that you were working
the thing was, they were in the war. And, they had so much propaganda, pumped into them that they believed, you know, what was all going on. And they treated us bad, like, you know. And that.
Did they actually harm you, or did they?
No, well,
just their attitude.
I mean, if it was absolutely pouring with rain, you know, I mean, you think it'd be that they would say, right, you know, get in the way for an hour or so, like, you know, until it clears up. I mean, when you got soaking wet and that sort of, when you get back to camp, there was nothing to wear to dry it, and you'd go to, you know, sleeping or your wet clothes and that sort of thing. And you wonder where, you know, aren't they really to go through that? But as things got on, and then when the Red Cross parcels come in.
That was quite a time, was it, before you got those?
Well, we got them, it was just after Christmas, I think.
Right.
I think it's in that book, I don't know.
You arrived at Starlag 3.
Yeah, and then we're in Rudo now. Rudo, Sally, the Camp Rudo.
Rudo, yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. This is in Berlin. Is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So you came here in August, and you started work on the 20th of August, and then you had a sick with a poisoned finger at one time.
Oh yeah, well that was caused through, like I'm telling you, they were this work. I mean, I was. I realised that what they were doing, every time we went out in the morning, you look at this job, you know, what you had to do, and I realised that they were increasing the amount of work all the time. And I thought, well, I'm not going to stick any more of this. So I downed tools with a chap on what we had on this working with me. And this guard come at me, like, see. And he cut his rifle, and he cut his rifle butt, and he was just on about striking me. And as I put my hand up to shield myself, he ripped this finger right out here, smashed this wrist, dropped me right on the ground. When I was on the ground, I mean, I was more dazed than that. He was wrapped me right across the back here. That's why I got all this back trouble now, like, and he knocked me unconscious, like, and that's where I went back to the camp. They carried me back. I don't know much about it until I got back to camp. And of course, I mean, I think I had a couple of days off sick, and then I had to go back to work again. But this finger was all, as of course we know, had no hot water in the camp. You know, it was just all cold water at the tap all the time. And of course, not being all that clean, this finger blew up like a almost terrific size. And I reported to Black Magic, I was telling you about, and he said, well, it's not good enough at the moment. Okay, you're not fitting up bad enough really to get you off work. So I went to work the next day, and when I come home, it was so bad, I went and saw him. And he said, all right, I'll answer it, you see, just like that. So he said, And so we went into this barrack room, which was a Cold War hospital. There was two or three beds in there with chaps that was in it, right? And they were all in there for a beriberi treatment. And we had two orderly Australian medical orderlies there as well. And he said to them, he said, lay on that. I had a long table there. Lay on the table there. And he said to Big Lofty Smith and Roy Walker, these Australians, he said, you hold him down. So they held me down, and then when I met to open hand like that, and this and black magic, all he had no medical kit. He had a pair of those, well, you see the nurses there, they're scissors with blunt tops, what they use them for bandages or something. I don't know whether they use them now with all this medical stuff that they got now. He had that, that's all he had, and he pushed it in like that, and he ripped the finger right up through, you know, that. And I'd already been in trouble with the guards, because I wanted to get a knife to cut the bread with, and I'd work on that, and I'll tell you that in a minute. But this guard come in, because I had 6 hours pack rule to do for pinching that knife, so we could cut the bread, and he come in there, because I had still 2 hours of this pack rule to do, and he come in and wanted to know what I was going to do when I was going to do this pack rule. And he stood there, and as the black magic cut this up like that, it all went out over him, and he just went right out flat. And they left me, and they're treating this guard, bringing him around. And lo and behold, that chap come back afterwards, and he was waiting for me to go to punishment. He come back, and he give me his bread ration. Yeah, so anyway, I was in hospital for quite a long time
What was the hospital like?
It's one of the hut rooms that was allocated for a hospital. And Black Magic had no medical gear at all.
Was he an Indian?
Yes, he was a second lieutenant. And that. I'll report him afterwards. When I claimed for my pension, I reported him then and that, you know. But when we did get the first lot of parcels that came through was for medical parcels, and he had, and we had a couple came into, when I was in the hospital. And it was all because all vitaminized all this stuff, got vitamin C and vitamin this and all that sort of thing. And he held it up and say, "Oh, vitamin so and so. Oh, that's you. That's what you want, And he believed in the sun for healing. Every time, it might be cold, but the sun was out. You have to go and sit outside, take the bandages off, and open that for the healer, and that was that. But this finger here, he'd had to cut it so much, and when he stroked it up and cleaned, I had to have it all cleaned every day. But
Did that hurt?
Well, no, I can't remember. I had the hot foments he spoke about. I had. It was a dirty old handkerchief what they'd boiled up in the wash team, and the only bandage thing they had was a roll of toilet roll, only it was that elastic. Remember they used to make all these coloured flowers years ago? Crepe paper, and they stretch it round. Well, they used to make a pad of that, put it in this handkerchief, put it in the boiling water, and put it on my finger. That's the only to draw anything out, But I went on for ages, and then in the end he said, "Well, we more or less clean the finger." He said, "You better pull it together now, And the only way he could do it is to bend my finger right down like that. And I said, "But he'd done that, and everything was going Well, I mean, we thought it was going all right, but then this morning is when the Swiss Red Cross come round, and we had a medical officer come round. That's the first time we'd seen anybody. And that's where they promised these parcels, like. And this medical officer looked at my hand, and he didn't say anything to me, but, I mean, old Big Lofty Smith, the medical orderly, he come in and he said, I've got some good news and bad news. And I said, what's... I said, give me the bad news first. He said, well, he said, you've got to go in the hospital tomorrow and have your arm off to here. Because the condition of your body, instead of coming out through this here where they're not tied up, it started, you know, festering all on there. And that was it. And it was terrible, like. So what they were going to do and cut my arm off. So anyway, old Black Magic come in and he said, he was quite annoyed about it because he thought, you know, he said, well, come on, let's get cracking on that. He cleaned it all out, and of course in the morning the guard came for me and I went into the military hospital in Berlin, and of course
German military hospital.
Well, yes, but there was English medical officers in there as well. See, they're non-combatant. They treat the wounded, whether it's, you know, enemy and that sort of thing. And they've been captured and they were there. Of course, they sort of looked at me. He said, you ain't going to have that arm up. And they give me some stuff to have it all done. And of course, I came back and it was a great thing for it. Because, I mean, it got my hand right. But, I mean, I can't straighten that thing. I can't get it up now. But, I mean, when I come back and even... well, I mean, it was terrible when I come back from Germany. I was just staying there like that, but it's gradually sort of coming up.
Yeah.
But
tell me about the Berlin hospital. This was a proper hospital building, was it?
Oh yeah, it's a proper hospital. Well, the military ones.
Mm-hmm. And what was the food like there? Was that
better? Oh no, I wasn't in there long enough for that. No, I was just going at the treatment night. You know, he cleaned it all out like, and no.
Yeah. So really all that came from the attack by the prison guard. Did that make you quite frightened of the guards?
No. I only wish we'd met him afterwards, out of the war. You know, I'd have had one that got my own back, I think, really. Mm. I mean, I realised, I didn't know until if I could have gone up and hit him, he was perfectly in his rights to shoot me. I mean, by the Geneva Conventions, but I didn't know that. But at the same time, I did find out that the amount of work, what they were giving us, was all wrong, you see. I mean, as the war changed round and we were within the war, I mean, they were better with us, like.
Their attitude changed.
That's right, yeah. And when we got Red Cross parcels, and we used to, I mean, we started, I mean, it was all done, I think, with the Red Cross. I mean, they used to have little tins of coffee. And they were all in sealed tins, but the Germans, you know, they used to tell us that England was finished, kaput, they used to say, like, you know. And I had some cigarettes sent through, and I used to bring a packet of players out and said, would you like a English cigarette, like, you know, and that, you know, you put so much propaganda. I mean, that's what we've done. We might be prisoners, but the propaganda we used to put on out there, I mean, it was... But I was telling you about this coffee. And the chaps had pierced the coffee, get the grains out, use them, dry them out, put them back in the tin, seal the tin, take them out and flog it to the Germans. The Germans couldn't do nothing because they knew if they reported us to this coffee, they'd be in worse trouble. So in a way, you've got them under your thumb line. You could get things done from the civilians. I mean, I felt sorry for them sometimes when you used to threaten them, right? And they were in the, you know, that. But, it's one day I took I had a bar of chocolate, Red Cross, and I took it out because I could get two loaves for a bar of chocolate, you see. And really, it was wrong because, I mean, a bar of chocolate, more good than this little old sawdusty bread, but at least you could eat this bread and you felt you'd never felt the hunger pains, so you see. And I was there, and of course I was in this wood yard where I worked, the last one, and Ernest was very good. I mean, he had no time for Hitler or anything like that. And his wife used to come up in during working hours, and he brought this little boy up. He was only about 3 years old, and he was looking so, he was sitting there, and he's running, his nose was running a bit, and he's, and he was looking sorry for himself, like, and I thought, God, I thought, that poor little kid, I don't suppose he's ever seen a sweet, you see. So I thought, oh, bugger the bread on. And I went and got this bar of chocolate. So I broke it a bit off and offered him one. Of course, he didn't know. He thought he was afraid of me, like, you know, prisoner. So I thought the only thing, I put a bit in my mouth at it, like, and of course, he, and I said, of course, that was fine for him, but doing that, I had a complete confidence in those, him and his wife, you know, that they, I mean, they had, as I say, had no time for the German was going and that sort of thing. And he used to go out at weekends and go around the farms and see whether he could get anything. And on Monday morning, if he got anything, he'd bring it in for me and that sort of thing. Like, so he'd done it that way. Yeah. Yeah.
How many days a week did you go out working?
6 days a week. And then, of course, right at the very end, we used to have to go each Sundays as well, like, you know. Yeah.
When you had your Sundays off, what did you do on Sundays?
Washing. So-called washing. Clean up and that sort of thing. And
you were tired, were you? Physically tired?
Well, you were, but, I mean, you just kept going as well. The ones that kept going and you know, had a strong willpower, they are the ones that survived. And one chaps that didn't, you know, let themselves go. I mean, they become prisoners as young men, and they went out like old men, like, you know, went home like old men.
Did you see some people who weren't coping very well? What did they do? Were they?
Well, you had
got depressed, wasn't they, really?
Yeah, I mean, I had like, you know, I was telling you this, Charlie had lost it with his feet. Well, when the mail started coming, there was handed out, you know, and I never saw Charlie never gets any mail, you see, and he was pretty proud. He was stressed. I mean, you when you chat going like that all the time, and you know, that's just that's right. And he said, he wouldn't say, I said, look, Charlie, why aren't you getting any mail, you see? And in the end, he said, well, look, I'll tell you what happened. He said, because his father was a farmer in Sussex. And he said his mother died when he was young, and he married a guy, and he couldn't get on with his stepmother, so he left home and joined the army. And he said, I've never had anything to do with that, you see. So he said, that's why I'm not expecting any mail. So what I've done, I mean, we were governed to, we used to get two letters, you know, what you fold up,
yeah.
And four postcards. And I used to take turn so that everybody got, you know, everybody got a letter. I mean, I've got a book here that's somewhere where I used to keep details of all of that. And I wrote to my younger sister and I said, look, I said, there's a chap there, you know, he's in a, I couldn't say in a bad way, you know, because it's all censored, like, but I said, you know, he has, you know, we'd like to drop him a few lines. And she did. And it did, it made a lot of difference to him, like, you know. Somebody to get a letter.
Yeah.
From a young lady as well. Yeah.
So, I mean, did some people, I mean, try to commit suicide or anything? Or?
No, I don't think so. I mean, the only time is, like, chaps get, we've had chaps killed, like, you know, making escapes and that sort of thing. But as for, I mean, I could never anybody being, colds or anything like that. We sort of still kept pretty healthy for all that, apart from being hungry. That, I mean, that was the worst part.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cold, I imagine. Did that worry you? The cold?
Well, yes. I mean, we used to have a big one of these iron stoves in each room, but I mean they used to be issued with these little briquettes. It was pitch and sawdust and pitch together, and when you put them in, you light them, they flare up in a gong sort of thing, And they were there, you never had enough to keep it warm. But then eventually they used to allow us to, if we could collect firewood, wherever we were, then we bring it in and do it that way, because we had to have some way of making a brewing up, you see. I mean, if you had a little packet of tea, you get a bit of rag and there'd be a little 2-ounce packet of tea. And you empty it into a bit of rag and tie it up in the bottom, like a dip it in, and you're right for a couple of days. You time to dip it in hot water, you get it coloured. But after about a week, you wouldn't get any colour at all, you look back now, you think, it was.
Yeah, you made your own tea bags.
Yeah.
Cliff Hoare, end of reel 4.